Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thank you, Domiti. It's 10:09. This is WGN. Hey, it's John Williams. I am back from a vacation with some listeners, so I missed the last two Saturday shows, and I really miss the shows. I miss Joe. I miss Domiti. I miss Griffin. Guys, it's good to see and hear you again. How have you all been?
Good. We miss you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, just me, I guess.
No, I miss you too.
Yeah, well, we are all back in the saddle now. We got a full 2-hour show. White Sox baseball, not until, what's a tip-off time for the Sox again this evening, Joe?
First pitch at 6:10.
And what time? I'm reading the time for the start of the Kentucky Derby. 6:46, is that Eastern or Central time?
I believe that's Eastern time, and boy, I mean, doesn't it always still take another 30 minutes when they start the coverage? It seems like it's going to start, but they just kind of draw it out even longer and longer.
I think the coverage starts shortly, and it's just all day long. And I got to say this about the Kentucky Derby. I don't know anything about it. We'll talk a little bit more about it a little later on. But I love it. You know, it's just one of those markers of spring and summer. It's something I don't know about, but when it comes on, I think, oh, that's cool. Look at the hats. Look at these horses. Look at the stories behind the owners and the horses. Look at the funny names of the horses. You know what I mean? I go on and on. It's a great day of television for something that lasts 2 minutes long.
It's a whole culture behind it that you can really get behind, whether you know much about racing or not.
Right, right, right. Yeah. So, Joe, you're the sports expert here. Who's going to win the race today?
Oh, boy. All I know, well, not all I know, but what I've been reading up on, I mean, the favorite has won the past 5 years. Right now, the favorite is Justify, 3-1 odds. And, I mean, everyone's talking about how strong that horse can run in muddy conditions still. And Lou was talking it earlier. Eddie Olczyk was mentioning My Boy Jack. There's reading up now. There's a few horses that they like in muddy conditions.
But well, like I say, I don't know a lot about it. I don't want to pretend to be an expert, but I think that Justify feels like a Kentucky Derby champion. Maybe it's the massive rippling frame. Maybe it's his chestnut coat. Is it a he or a she? Evocative of Secretariat. Maybe it's the one-word name that seems to beg for an exclamation point. But I think 52-year-old jockey Mike Smith is a sensation on this horse, and they've got a real good chance about the 3-year-old colt to move. Those are my personal thoughts, anyway.
That was pretty convincing.
Yeah, yeah. If you missed him and want to hear him again, just read the front page of the sports section of today's Chicago Tribune. Hey, by the way, before we just go to our first guest, give me 35 more seconds to just mention the stops we were at on that Kelly Cruises. 50 listeners, Brenda and I were in Barcelona, Rome, Monaco, Portofino, Santa Margarita, Villefranche, Marseille, Rome, some other places like that. A little less than half of the group was traveling with us for the first time. Some have been with us for as many as 4 trips. The Regent Seven Seas Explorer that we were on is a floating work of art for 750 passengers, and we just had a swell time. Next August, we're going to be on a much smaller boat. It's one of those river cruises, and this one will start in Paris, go up the Seine to Normandy for the 75th anniversary of the D-Day invasion, and then back to Paris. We'll be on the Seine and in Paris for 7 or 8 days. And all of the details are at kellycruises.com. Kellycruises.com. That trip is selling fast, even though it's over a year away. The way you plan these things is about now. So if that sounds something that is of interest to you, I'm just telling you, kellycruises.com would be a good place to click around today. Another fun thing to do today would be to take a bike ride in your neighborhood, or if you're close enough, in the city of Chicago. And the Divvy Bike Program has a relatively new way, as I understand it, of letting you ride the bikes. I had one famous incident where I didn't exactly understand it and drove my niece around on a bicycle and racked up about $87. And I think because of that, you know, because of maybe either the confusion or because the rates weren't, I don't think, scheduled as well as they could be for some of the ways some of us use it, they've got what's called a weekend pass now, or a journey pass. Let's ask Michael Crichton to tell us a little bit more about it. He is the general manager of Divvy. Michael, this is John Williams, and you're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, Don, this is Michael. Thanks for having me. I'm great.
So
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is Divvy a national program? Is this the same Divvy that's in cities everywhere? Are you in Chicago only?
So in a way, our parent company, Motivate, which operates out of New York, operates in 8 cities throughout the country. So there's City Bike in New York, there's Capital Bike Share in D.C., there's Hubway in Boston, and those, we're all basically operated under the same roof, but have different branding and different sponsorships.
Do you understand my sort of confusion of what happened to me and how glad people like me are that there's a different rate structure now?
100%. Originally, we were really meant for short A2B trips. And that hasn't wildly changed. That's still definitely a great way to use Divvy. But one thing we found is when we really started talking to our riders last summer is that the old casual pass structure, which was 24 hours of access with 30-minute trips, didn't really meet the needs of especially kind of the weekend rider and those just kind of looking to have a casual ride near the lakefront. So that's why we introduced the Explorer Pass, which is now still 24 hours of access, so unlimited trips, but that trip time is now up to 3 hours. So really lets you kind of get plenty of ride time in there without any extra fees on top of the initial. Yeah.
And that's $15, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So for $15, I swipe my credit card. I'm able to pull a bike out. Now I've got it for 24 hours. But you want me to ride it in increments never longer than 3 hours. I need to turn it in and then take it or another bike back out. Why do you want me to park the bike again after 3 hours?
Well, ultimately, we like to keep the bikes at the stations where they're secure. But we also want to give people flexibility to do with the bikes what they want. So ultimately, we really want to incentivize people for bringing the bikes back and keeping them kind of in the system and in rotation, but also, while also meeting the needs of those our riders that want to, take that leisurely ride.
Yeah. Well, I guess, my read on it, too, tell me if this is wrong, is that you don't, at the end of the day, want somebody to hog the bike for 24 hours. You do. It's a ride-sharing system. So if I'm incentivized or penalized, if I've incentivized to bring the bike back after 3 hours, now there's a bike in a rack somewhere that somebody else would have access to. It's not to say that I won't have access to another bike, but it sort of opens up a parking space, for somebody else who wants to get in there.
You got it. That's exactly right. Keep those bikes available for everyone.
Yeah. So is that throughout Chicago then? And I wanted to talk about what's going on the south side too. But so is that just on weekends? Tell me about the parameters of that Explorer Pass.
So the Explorer Pass is available 24/7, any time of day or night. Anyone can feel free to grab an Explorer Pass for whatever they need it for. I think the key use would probably be along the lakefront, but certainly you can use it if you're taking longer trips across the city from one point to another.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I could do this on a Tuesday, though, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, what advice do you have for me? I'm going to take the bike out and I'm going to go down the lake, and then maybe I'll cut over into this little neighborhood. Now, I'm not exactly sure where the next Divvy station is to park it. What advice do you have for me in a situation like that?
So the best thing to use right now is Transit app. You can purchase passes, stations, see bike and dock availability at any given station location. That's probably the best way to kind of, while you're on the go, see where different stations are. They also have a trip planning feature, so you can type in a destination, and it could be an address, and it will give you, if you don't have a bike yet, it'll tell you where the nearest station is to pick up a bike, and then it'll tell you where the nearest station is to where you're going to leave that bike.
Well, if I've got the app on my phone and I'm riding a Divvy bike, I can look down and see where the nearest place is to park the bike?
Yes.
I see. Okay. Well, that's good news. There's a story in the news, too, that Some people are concerned that the south side of Chicago is not sufficiently served by a bike sharing program like this. What do you say about that?
Well, it's tough to say. I think ultimately our end goal is to cover the entire city. We aren't quite there yet. Currently, we cover about 100 square miles of Chicago. And as we both know, Chicago is a very, very large city. But we certainly want to get there, and that's still our end goal, is to ultimately cover every inch of the city.
Is your worry that the bikes will either be vandalized or stolen, or that there'll be payment issues?
No, not necessarily. Not anymore. Where it would be in the other area of the city. We do offer a DV for Everyone program for folks in low and moderate income areas. That's a $5 membership, also payable in cash, so for folks that don't have a credit card. So we give a lot of options for different income types.
Oh, one last thing about the Explorer Pass for $15. Do I have to be a DV member? Do I have to sign up for $100 a year or whatever it is in order to then use it for a day at $15?
No, absolutely not. You do not have to be a member. Anyone can grab an Explorer Pass.
Got it.
And the other product we had rolled out in addition to the Explorer Pass is the single ride option. So for folks that don't want to spend $15, but they want to just go bike from and ride from point A to point B, they can grab a bike for $3. And that gets you up to 30 minutes of ride time. And that's a really great option as well for just trialing the system and you have a quick trip.
Michael Crutzen is the general manager. Is that the title? General manager of Divvy, right?
Yes, sir.
Michael, thanks for your time. I'm going to spend $15 this weekend, maybe 30. Maybe I'll bring Brenda. So thanks for your time this afternoon, or this morning, rather.
Excellent. Bring all your friends. Really appreciate you having me on, and enjoy the sunshine.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, today's the day to have that conversation. Divvy, of course, with two V's, and the kiosks are throughout the city. It's 10:21, and this is WGN. It's 10:25. We'll get to news in about 6 minutes here. By the way, Griff, you were playing for us, or forced us to watch the other day, the new John Mulaney.
I've been known to do that. It's the fandom that I have the least chill about, I think, is John Mulaney. I'm a big fan.
Even more so than your Kanye West fanship?
Well, that's all down the tube. I don't want to talk about
that's
that.
That's hard. Okay.
You're going to bring that up? We've got 2 minutes.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't make a left turn. Mulaney. So did he drop another show? Is that what it was?
Kid Gorgeous is his new special. It came out on the 1st, so it's been out for a few days on Netflix.
I see. It's hilarious.
It's the best.
In part because every little story that he tells is great. His style is great. His economy of words is great. And he tells a story about walking his dog in his stroller. But that's not what you wanted.
Which is something you're well acquainted with.
I have an action stroller for Bingo, my sort of crippled wiener dog.
You're the perfect target audience for that. Well, but there's this one section where he talks about a man who came to speak at his elementary school when he went to school here in Chicago. Detective named J.J. Bittenbinder.
Came to speak to his school.
Yes.
Was it at St. Ignatius, or maybe it's probably grade school?
No, yeah, in his grade school. And it seems like he came over and over to give tips to the kids on how to stay safe. And I looked up his Wikipedia, and he did a lot of that. He went on a lot of shows in the 90s, including Oprah, Primetime Live with Diane Sawyer.
This Bitbinder guy?
Yeah. He appeared on CNN, and he did a special called Tough Target.
I saw a little of that Tough Target. We'll get to that in a second. But it looks like a TED Talk before there were really TED Talks.
Right. Well, just listen to him on it. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Detective J.J. Bittenbinder wore three-piece suits. He also wore a pocket watch. 2 years in a row, he wore a cowboy hat. He also had a huge handlebar mustache. None of that matters, but it's important to me that you know that. So Bittenbinder came every year with a program to teach us about the violent world waiting for us outside the school gym. And that program was called Street Smarts! Time for Street Smarts with Detective J.J. Bittenbinder. Shut up, you're all gonna die! Street Smarts! That was the general tone. He would give us tips to deal with crime. I will share some of the tips with you this evening. Okay, tip number one, Street Smarts! Let's say a guy pulls a knife on you to mug you. What do? You go fumbling for your wallet, and you go fumbling for your wallet. Well, in that split second, that's when he's gonna stab you. So here's what you do. You kids get yourselves a money clip, okay? You can get these at any haberdashery. You put a $50 bill in the money clip. Then, when a guy flashes a blade, you go, "You want my money? Go get it." Then you run the other direction. And our teachers were like, "Write that down."
Now, he goes on like that for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to give you the gist.
Sure.
But so now, J.J. Bittenbinder's VHS on Amazon has gone up like 3,000%. Like,
there really is a Bittenbinder. He really is a former Chicago cop. He
yes.
really did these talks.
Yeah, you afford comedians a lot of poetic license. And I'm just watching this, like, I'm sure there was a guy like this, but this can't be real. And it's like 100% real. And to prove it, here's a little clip from a special that he did for TV in the 90s.
All right, now I'm not a policeman. I'm just Joe Citizen walking down the street. And a guy comes up to me and says, "Give me your money." I said, "Okay, pal." Hand goes in the pocket. Out comes the money. Show the money. "This is all I got." And then what happens next? The money goes that way and I go this way. Now there's no hesitation. There's no wait. It's the money goes that way and I'm going this way and I'm yelling fire. This guy and his bundle of noise are running this way. And the money is over there all by itself. Quiet. Which way do you think he's going to go?
I bet people remember it, too. I'm sure people are listening now, like, yeah, I remember that guy. But I didn't know about it, and it was a real joy to be exposed.
It really
for the first
is.
Time.
And
it's
he,
so awesome.
And he really has a three-piece suit on with a gigantic...
He looks exactly as he described him, yes.
I mean, the Oakland A's so would draft him just on the mustache alone.
And he'd be great, yeah.
And he... And he's so dramatic and so self-aware. It's very, very funny. So thank you to Bittenbinder, and thank you to John Mulaney.
Bittenbinder.
Sorry.
How
sorry.
Dare you.
And thank you, Griff. All right. Domati's got your news. That's next. This is WGN.
My kind of town, Chicago is.
It's 10:40.
My kind of town.
I'm John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Ave.
My kind of people, too.
Blue skies overhead.
People who.
Sunshine, shadows.
Smile at you.
Folks strolling up and down Michigan Avenue. It's lovely here right now. And I hope you have a real nice day, too. I'm thinking of Chicago and my kind of town just because I wanted to tell you what the itinerary is for my brother and his wife as they are touring in Chicago. They got into town on Thursday, and they will be here until tomorrow night. So figure 3.5 full days of touring in Chicago. What do you do? And you can't do it all, but you need to know my brother. He is a force of nature and positivity, but his energy is irrepressible. He just goes. There are no small gestures or trips for my brother. So like if I was going to go to your city, he's from Denver, or if I was going to come to Chicago, I might put two things on my agenda each day. Like we'll go see a museum and then we'll have dinner, or we'll go to lunch and then we'll go for a walk. But I wouldn't go, 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 go. Here's my brother and his wife and a couple of their friends. Thursday, they got into town, checked their bags at the hotel, and then ran over to the Billy Goat for lunch. Then they came to WGN Radio and watched our radio shows for about an hour or so. Then they went to a place called Fig and Olive and had some cocktails. And then they went to a restaurant called Gejas, which is a romantic spot that my brother and his wife love. And they all went to dinner there. And then they went to the redhead Piano Bar. They got up the next morning, Friday, had breakfast, walked along the lakefront. Then they did the architecture boat tour. Then they went up and down Michigan Avenue and shopped a little bit. Then they took an Uber over to Wrigleyville, where we live, and they had some drinks at our place. After that, we all walked over to the Brick House, that new restaurant edifice next to Wrigley Field, and we had dinner there and a couple more drinks. And then after that, they went to Buddy Guy's and listened to some jazz music, to the blues for a couple of hours. And then they went to the top of the Hancock Building. The next day, today, Saturday, they're bike riding along the lakefront, and then they're going to go to Banderas, which is a nice restaurant downtown, for lunch, and then they're going to go to Hamilton tonight, and then they're going to go to a bar near the theater where Hamilton is playing. Sunday morning, they're getting up, having breakfast, they're going to go to church, atone for the sins of the last 3 days, and then they're going to go to Miller's Pub, and then they're going to walk along the river, and then they're going to go to dinner, and then they're going to get on an airplane. I cannot do that. I don't know people that can do that, and certainly not people in their 50s, but they can. When we would do the vacation with listeners, I wasn't here last Saturday because we were on that Kelly cruise. You know, the best way to do those trips to me is a half a day. You do the 8 a.m., you get off the boat, and you tour Rome or Venice or wherever you are for maybe 4, 5, maybe 6 hours. Then you get back on, you've got half the day left on the boat. The full day ones are just exhausting. Incidentally, I brought along James Comey's book on our cruise, A Higher Loyalty, and my review of it is posted on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. WGN King John. We've headlined my review, the review no one else is doing. You can read it, share it, and comment there. I know a lot of you are. The other book I brought on the cruise, by the way, was a book called The Feather Thief by a guy named Kirk Johnson. If you liked The Orchid Thief by Susan Orlean, or, say, Seabiscuit by Laura Hillebrand, or maybe a book like Longitude by David Sebel, these are all great little micro stories about specific events that tell you so much more about the world at a specific place and time. I love these kind of books, and for that reason, you will love this book if you like those. Particularly, it's about a guy who steals a collection of rare birds, deceased and preserved at the British Museum of Natural History. To appreciate why someone would want them and why you would want to read a book about this, about these birds and their feathers, you have to know a little bit about the history of feathers. And so that's how the book starts. The most beautiful birds the world has ever seen are the birds of paradise. Their brightly colored feathers, and sometimes whole bodies, were used to adorn the hats of women in the late 18th and 19th centuries. Women's hats were a big deal. You needed one for church, you needed a hat for dinner, you needed one for driving if you were going to be in a motor car, you needed one to go shopping, you needed a different one for everyday things, you needed another one for fancy occasions, and so on. These birds of paradise had lived, diversified, and prospered for centuries on the island of New Guinea. Now, once man discovered them, though, and the market for them, the hunt was on. And so by 1862 in France, there were 280 feather shops. The birds of paradise were sold. The bird plucking and stuffing workers union prospered across the land. In London, 155,000 of these birds of paradise were sold in a four-year stretch. Part of the then $2.8 billion trade. One British dealer sold 2 million bird skins in a single year. By 1900, 83,000 New Yorkers were employed in the trade of bird skinning and feather plucking, for which some 200 million North American birds were killed each year. These numbers are kind of staggering, but it gives you a sense of how important, popular, and profitable the bird feather business was. As the number of birds started to dwindle, their value went up. At a time when gold sold for $20 an ounce, some egret feathers went for $32. Johnson writes in his book, when the Titanic went down in 1912, the most valuable and highly insured merchandise in its hold was 40 crates of feathers. And so they hunt these birds in terrible ways to about extinction. And eventually the market then dries up. Groups said, we got to stop this. And the story goes forward from there. Fascinating stuff, really well told. And the book is called The Feather Thief by Kirk Johnson. And I'm looking forward to finishing the book. I haven't gotten all the way through it yet. It's 10:47. You know, another what I think is nice distraction from the news these days is the royal wedding. People magazine has on its cover a royal wedding story. Griff, I think maybe when we do our Vibe Score segment in the next hour, you should rate our enthusiasm for the royal wedding that's coming up. Like on a scale of 1 to 100, how psyched are you for this? I know I'm getting ahead of us, but I'm like a 92 right now.
Hey, you're spoiling it. Okay.
I have never cared about the Royals.
Well, I'll withhold my opinion, and you'll just have to wait. Oh, boy.
That'll keep them listening. Domiti, are you, or Joe, are you guys Royal followers at all? Maybe not. But
not really at all.
I want to hear the newscast just completely change, like, in the couple days before, where every single story is about the minutiae of the upcoming wedding.
Boy, you could do that, too. I mean, that's a trade. That's a whole industry, royal watching. So we'll get to that a little later on. But it's just nice to... You know, the thing was, I'm strumming through this People magazine, and not one word in there about politics, not one word in there about the Democrats or the Republicans. And you sometimes forget there is still a whole world going on outside of that little arena.
Yeah.
It's not as important a world, but it is a world.
Yeah, people's always been there for you if you needed it. I don't know if you're just discovering that they don't really.
You do. You do. I mean, really.
Made a couple Trump covers, I think, after he got elected that I remember were making people mad.
But maybe, yeah, but I mean, is it...
But you're right. You're
it
right.
is an oasis, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's them hiding from the reality of the world. That's being covered. I'm just like, oh, yeah, people still care about the royal wedding. There's a royal wedding coming up. Woo-hoo! You know? I mean, thank God for the volcano in Hawaii, unless you happen to live near there. But, okay, that's awesome. I'll look at those pictures for half an hour. That's kind of a fun story, too. Fun in a, you know, sort of...
In a not fun at all way, yeah. Okay.
And
you lost me there a little bit. Was the volcano on the cover of People? I don't think so.
My point, I think, about this is that... And I'm not sure, by the way, but I think...
Yeah, I'm waiting for it.
My point is that when I stumble upon distractions from the other news, I'm happily distracted. And I think it's almost important to seek them out and to sort of acknowledge them, be it the royal wedding or the power of Mother Nature and the perilous situation that people in Hawaii live by. It's kind of fascinating stuff, too. It's 10:49. We are 11 minutes away from that other news and things that Domiti has for you here on WGN. Griff, I was chuckling because speaking of the royal wedding, I'm reading that a slice of the royal wedding cake from Prince William and Britain's Catherine, the Duchess of Cambridge. So they got married 37 years ago, and a slice of that cake was grabbed by the chauffeur, and it's been on display at the Stafford Hotel in London. They are now going to auction that 37-year-old slice of royal wedding cake off in Beverly Hills next month. And they think it'll get hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
How much would you pay for it? You think hundreds and hundreds of dollars? That's a little underwhelming. You think more?
Right. Well, I think
if
you had a Princess Di or a Sarah Ferguson, maybe somebody with a little more currency, it might be worth more.
I think if you're willing to spend, $10 on it, you're probably willing to spend $10,000.
If you're in for a nickel,
Yeah.
So there are also wedding cake samples being auctioned from the marriage of Prince Andrew. And here, Sarah Ferguson, held at Buckingham Palace in 1986. They think that the Sarah Ferguson, Prince Andrew slice will go for around $800. And the marriage of Princess Anne and Captain Mark Phillips in 1973 could go for $500.
You have to talk to people that were at the wedding. Like, how good was it? That, and then I'll know how much to bid.
People keep
because if it's no good, then what?
You're talking about consuming the slice?
Yeah. Well, what are we doing here? It's a piece of cake.
Actually, I don't know what you do with it once you get it. I'd like to try it, but I don't think it's edible anymore. But people do put their wedding cake slice in the freezer, and they'll keep it for a year or more, and then eat it on their anniversary.
Oh, really? Is that a thing?
I'm pretty sure that's a thing. I did that. Brenda and I did that.
So it better be a thing.
Well, but we didn't get to a year. There was one day there was nothing in the house. We were kind of looking for some dessert. And sure. I go, that slice of wedding cake's looking pretty good in there. And it was still good like 3-4 months later.
That's funny.
Do me this favor. We're about to break for news. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Please text to us one of two things. How long did you keep your slice of wedding cake? Or what's the strangest thing that you've grabbed and collected? I know a guy who had a half-eaten sandwich partially chewed on by Richard Nixon. He was a waiter at an event.
and Dick Nixon had his meat, his choppers around this thing, and he kept it for years and years and years. What a keepsake. You go, what's that in your freeze? He goes, that's a half-eaten sandwich. Why you got that in there? Because Richard Nixon. And I'm like, now I want to look at that sandwich.
Yeah, I'd probably take a look at it, but I really don't know where I fall on this, because I am thinking about like historical foods that I would like to collect.
What do you mean by that?
Well, like a piece of cake from the royal wedding, or what's another, you know, food that was at some kind of... Oh, now we got the phones ringing, we got to go to news.
I know that, but you can text, or we can talk about this later on, but maybe some grapes from the Last Supper, or maybe something else that's happened.
That's a good one. Something from the Last Supper.
That's a reach, okay? 312-981-7200. The longest you kept that slice or the strangest thing you've collected. We'll read your texts after the news. It's 1057 on WGN. We ask you to text to us. Thank you, Domati. It's 1110 on WGN. The Mincing Rascals segment in just a second. We ask you to text to us the strangest things you've collected. Like, say, a half-eaten sandwich you picked up off a table that Richard Nixon chewed into, or a slice of royal wedding cake that's being auctioned off 37 years later next month in Beverly Hills. So, Joe, what's on your mind?
So, in 2001, the Diamondbacks won the World Series. It was Game 7 against the Yankees, a very impressive World Series, obviously the heartbreak of 9/11. And the game-winning hit was hit by Luis Gonzalez. The next spring, he was chewing on a piece of gum in a spring training game, spit it out. A fan asked a security guard to pick up that piece of gum, gave it to him. He sold it for $10,000.
That wins.
He donated apparently all the money to his high school.
Wow.
But yeah, $10,000 for a chewed piece of bubble gum.
You know, there's a lot of things that may give you pause there, like a guy who would think to do that and then would put it up for auction. I guess the real remarkable thing is, what do you, who, you got $10,000 for that?
Who bought it?
Exactly.
Who knew that it was authentic?
Where is it
DNA
today?
Testing?
I know. Yes, exactly.
And why did he not pick it up? Why did he make the poor security guard pick it up for him?
Well, you got more work to do here, Joe Brand.
Oh, great. I should have kept my mouth shut.
Hey, Griff, any other unusual texts from our listeners?
Asked specifically if people saved their wedding cake. And yeah, a lot of people have. From George, I got this text. My wife and I will be married 44 years in November, and we still have a piece of wedding cake we saved on our wedding day in the freezer.
Wow. Still in the freezer.
Yeah, and a lot of other people, too.
44. It's 11:11 on WGN. Okay, so we do something called the Mincing Rascals. We record this podcast. And if you don't listen to it with some regularity, I hope that you would give it a try. I think it's really good. We've got a smart collection of people like Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune. She's a columnist and editorial writer there. And this week we assembled Eric Zorn, the Tribune columnist, Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist at the Tribune. I was in the house, and our very own Steve Bertrand. Now, the gang talked at the beginning of the podcast this week about President Trump and about the fact that Rudy Giuliani was interviewed by Fox News host Sean Hannity. Remember, Giuliani said that the president paid his attorney for the hush money to Stormy Daniels. The president has since said that Giuliani didn't have his facts right. Anyway, after we talked about that, Steve Bertrand said,
can we talk about his doctor? A little bit. Are we going to do that?
It's not on my list, but go ahead, Steve. I can put that in the... Actually, this may start to matter more than that. But go ahead.
So his doctor, who looks weird, so it makes him part of a character. And then he was interviewed last year, or 2 years, 3 years ago now, and he released that letter that said the president was nearly superhuman, and you know this was his report. Now come to find out that the president dictated that letter to him, which is comical until it's not, if you remember that Trump was making an issue of Hillary Clinton's health during the whole campaign, and you have this doctor releasing this phony letter about it. I hate to play that if the roles were reversed, but my God, if the roles were reversed on this and Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama had dictated their doctor's report and had it been released, all hell would be coming out. Now, then this week, this doctor said that the Trump security guy raided his office and stole his the president's health records.
Liberated.
I kind of am with the president on the raiding of the offices in a way.
Why?
Because this doctor was quoted in the New York Times talking about prescriptions that he gave Donald Trump.
I couldn't believe anybody was making a big deal about a drug that's to grow his hair, which seemed to be so important. And it certainly is not a breach of medical trust to tell somebody they take Propecia to grow their hair. What's the matter with that?
That's a violation. You can't do that.
Yeah, yeah. Propecia is a baldness drug.
I understand that, but if my doctor was doing that, I wouldn't want my records taken from him, too.
It wouldn't matter what the medication is. The president's team is anticipating questions that the Mueller team might ask, and they have been leaked or released to the New York Times. So I'm asking you guys, what questions would you like Donald Trump to answer? The ones that have been released aren't all that shocking, right? And we suspect that Mueller probably has a pretty good idea of what the answers are anyway. Okay, here's mine. Top five favorite movies.
Oh, come on.
No, I am serious. For all, I mean, yeah. What did you know? When did you know it? Blah, 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 right? But literally, for a guy who is tries so hard to be so transparent about his feelings, about his ego, about his needs, it's amazing to me that we don't know what his top five favorite movies are, or his favorite TV shows that he was not in, or his best parent memory with his kids.
I would challenge him to name his four children.
An embarrassing fear he has. Wouldn't it humanize him? Wouldn't you love to know? If you think about it for a minute, I wonder what his childhood or his fear is today. If you could change anything about yourself now, what would it be? What books are on your bedside table right now?
What books have you ever read besides books that you have ostensibly
written? Describe for me your dream salad.
Well, we saw that on Cinco de Mayo.
Yes.
That's right. Thumbs up. I would love to know the answers to some of those questions.
The president in 2016 in the summer was at a podium, and he said, you know, we've got, wait till you see, we're going to have a big announcement coming. It had to do with Hillary Clinton. Maybe Monday, maybe coming up soon. It's going to come, and wait till you hear what we're going to say or have to say. And he said that in the days before the Trump Tower meeting with his sons and the Russians. I would like to know what he meant when he said that and what he knew. That's the answer.
I'm genuinely curious to make fun of him for not maybe reading enough, but I don't think that he does read anything, that he doesn't know anything particularly, that he's all about gut instinct. And I'd like to give him like a basic current events quiz about things that are going on in like the coal industry that he says he cares so much about. I don't think that he understands any of these issues. I don't think he understands healthcare. Yeah. I believe that he is an idiot, as John Kelly reportedly said. I think that he doesn't understand basic things. Now, that doesn't mean that he doesn't have certain kind of street smarts, but when it comes to knowledge about what's actually going on in the world, I think he's fundamentally ignorant. I mean, is that unfair? I mean, I'm looking at
I think that's pretty spiteful. Or
I think that applies.
I would say he is glaringly incurious.
Yeah, that's the problem.
There's a good.
I guess the fruit of that would be what Eric is talking about.
It sounds harsher than I mean it.
Yeah, but it does.
you're ignorant and you're an idiot. But I don't mean that.
Let's say it this way. He's incurious and that leads to ignorance.
Here in Illinois, the state senate approved a bill. The state senate here in Illinois approved a bill that would require public schools to teach LGBT history, the same way we learn about minority groups in school, the travails of African Americans or Hispanics or Asian Americans. So too should we learn about the LGBT community. The Illinois Family Institute said this is proof that the left is, quote, trying to normalize homosexuality. Is this bill a good thing or a bad thing, Steve?
I don't know if it's a needed thing. I understand the goal of it, maybe.
You only have so many hours of the day in school, right?
Well, right, and so there's that. And I think even though we might think they're on the wrong end of it, we do owe religious groups who are opposed to gay marriage and other issues. I don't know what I'm going to end up saying here, but this is offensive to their religion. And so maybe there should be a little more sensitivity to that in public schools. Was there a point there?
I'm shocked that you are arguing that the public schools should respect a religious view when deciding their curriculum, right?
Yeah,
that's what
too.
You're saying.
Maybe, yeah. I want more time on this one.
Okay,
we'll come
back to you in several years.
I have a bunch of thoughts on this. One is I don't like the idea of Springfield in general micromanaging school curricula in various places. I don't think they should be getting into all this stuff about moments of silence and everything else that they manage to meddle in down there in Springfield. I don't think they're qualified On the other hand, I think that it's a good idea to teach about LGBTQ history. I guess there's no Q in the...
They didn't have it in there, but sometimes people do.
But I think it's a good idea to teach that. There is also a problem with it, which is that when you go back very far in history, when you go back more than a few decades, there's a lot of people who we now suspect or think might have been gay or gender binary, whatever, but to go back and retrospectively out them to make a political point or make a social point, say, well, we think that this person might have been gay. We think that, let's just take, was it...
Abraham Lincoln?
Abraham Lincoln or Eleanor Roosevelt, people who think they might have had gay lovers, something like that. Do we do that? Do we go back and out them, and do we frame it the way we would frame it today? I think that we don't. I think this is a problem. I think that to be able to say in our history text to talk about the gay rights movement, yes, we should talk about the gay rights movement. We should talk about the social movement that led to the legalization of gay marriage. Of course, that's part of contemporary history. To ignore that is irresponsible. But to go back in history and say, well, we think that Abraham Lincoln, another good example, like we think that Abraham Lincoln had a gay male lover. We don't know that to be the case. And just to say that we do in order to prove a historical point or to make some sort of a social point, I think is wrong as a matter of education. I will now yield the floor to Scott Stanis.
I was just stunned to learn that they still teach history.
This is a way to sneak history back into the curriculum.
I think you know, they need to have a basic understanding of human history. LGBT is—I bring it into the contemporary times, as Eric mentioned, the modern history, the Stonewall Uprising. I think the legalization, the Supreme Court decision on gay marriage. Those are important things to learn and know that they happened. But to have a curriculum on it, I'm with Eric. I think having Springfield or any capital tell schools what their curriculum should or should not be is
okay.
I'd like to amend my remarks to echo those of Mr. Stantis and Mr. Zorn, please.
Wow. Well, thank you for that thoughtful insight, Steve. So if the state, though, cedes control of that to the local school board, which I think is what they want to do anyway, and the local school board decides to have a curriculum that covers this, the question's still in play. Should they or should they not? I'm not sure this belongs in the curriculum anyway. For one thing, Steve, maybe to your point, I think in order to teach this, you end up having to vilify somebody. And it might be somebody who's sitting in class and whose parents very much disagree with the position you're taking, even though it's legal. They still feel it's wrong.
If you can't teach history like that without ladling your values onto it. If you can say, okay, here is the issue with gay marriage. Here's how it evolved. Going from Stonewall to legalization of gay marriage or the Supreme Court decision, you can talk about the various sides. You can talk about what happened without saying, well, these people were bad and these people were good.
You can? Really? I want to hear you do that.
I think you can. In a history class, in a high school history class, yes, you can. You can talk about that.
Would you agree with me that the challenge would be impressive?
The default would be the good guys won. And so it'd be hard to teach that class and make it say,
things any way they want to hear them, too, right? I mean, you're going to be teaching this class and you know you've got your I's dotted and your T's crossed. And then someone's going to come home and tell their mom and dad they said that LGBTQ is okay or that the Christian view of it is wrong. And now you have a school board meeting.
It's going to happen. But, I think that is a pedagogical skill to be able to teach a class and let the students talk about what's going on. But tell them, give them the points, the landmark points in history to then talk about this issue or to learn about it.
Okay, well then, speaking of the schools, the Village Leadership Academy is a private school in the South Loop area of Chicago. And a teacher there, Bianca Jones, is teaching her kids history and about activism.
At our school, we also think it's important for students to engage in a social activism curriculum. So each year, students decide what campaign or what issue they would like to address.
They have been doing train takeovers where the fifth graders board the L and they ask passengers to sign a petition to change the name of Douglas Park. Douglas Park is named after one-time Illinois Senator Stephen A. Douglas, whose family owned slaves. The students want to change the name from Douglas with one S to Douglas with two S's, thereby honoring former slave activist and orator Frederick Douglass. Are you guys signing the petition when they get on your L?
I'm signing the petition so they'll get off my L car. The nothing more irritating to me than someone getting on my L car and asking for my attention.
Now, let's add that to the curriculum.
Fifth Don't graders. Use my L car. I want to read or listen to
Grumpy
podcasts.
Old man. 101.
10-year-olds are doing this, L. And it sounds like they're doing it well.
So I brought up in the past, you know, when a statue or when something becomes that in and of itself, when does... Was it Megsfield or Balbo? When does Balbo become our Balbo and not the original Balbo, right? So I tend to lean toward, I don't like erasing names in that way. I love this solution. I hadn't heard this story.
Too. Put so an then, S on the statue.
So and then the people for who all their lives said they lived in Douglas Park still can say that, but the Douglas is changed.
That you've added an extra S.
Well, no, but you can, or say it proudly, but then it doesn't erase Douglas Park, you know, or the, you know, I used to play in Douglas Park, or I grew up near Douglas. You can still
say that.
But
you're interested
that.
In the phonics of this?
I mean, yeah.
It's a different park, Steve. It's a different park.
But
now.
See, that's the thing. It's not. It's the same park, and it's the same-ish name. I am interested in the phonics a little bit. I don't like the disappearing of places, you know, and if you disappeared Balbo or something like that, even though generations of us have known it and having nothing to do with the original Balbo, if we disappeared Douglas Park and all of the people who grew up around Douglas Park now had to say, I grew up around Emmanuel Field, it used to be Douglas Park, I don't like
well,
that.
Steve, this all comes up with Jackson Park. Because Andrew Jackson was such an awful guy in so many ways, we could just say it's now Bo Jackson.
Exactly.
You know, that would
I thought Michael Jackson.
And Steve would be a problem.
And Steve's logic is, well, it's the same park.
That's true.
And I'm like, no, that's a different park.
By the way, it would be Jesse Jackson Park.
Junior.
It is the same park, John. It's the same physical place.
Well, Steve, it's no one's ever suggested that you bulldoze parks. I mean, maybe we take down some statues.
It's the same issue. Steve is right. It's the same issue. What do we do with this history that we're uncomfortable with that we have honored in this way? It's the same issue that dealt with all the Civil War statues, right? With all Robert E. Lee statues that got people in Charlottesville so exercised.
More and more folks are listening to the Mincing Rascals. That's part of the podcast that we broadcast on Saturdays. You can hear it all, including the gang's recommendations, something they think you'll enjoy eating, drinking, watching, listening to, or reading. We close each podcast each week with that at the Mincing Rascals, wherever you subscribe to your finer podcast. Thank you, Eric Zorin, Scott Stantis, Steve Bertrand. This is John Williams. We're getting close to news. It's 11:25.
This is a fantasy. Baby, it's you and me.
Thank you, Doma T. It's 11:40. This is WGN. I'm John Williams. Our Vibe Score segment, we close the show on Saturday mornings, getting ready for Amy Guth at noon with some music that Griffin introduces us to. What are we listening to here, Griff?
I just want to let it play.
Okay.
No. Tracy Ann and Danny. The song is called It Can't Be Love Unless It Hurts.
Okay, so on the Vibe Score segment, we rate things in pop culture on a score of 1 to 100. I'm going to give that a 42.
Whoa! What's the problem?
I thought at first that was like a Will Ferrell kind of parody of some pop song.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking crazy.
Yeah. This is the lead singer of Camera Obscura.
I recognize the voice.
Tracy Ann Campbell.
I thought you were going to tell us that was Camera Obscura.
Well, perhaps you've heard me talk about them before. They are my favorite band.
No.
And she's teamed up.
I know. I'm on thin ice.
She's teamed up with a guy named Danny Coughlin, who's in another band called Crybaby. And it's not headline news, but it is in my world, and I have power at this show, and I can play in this one small measure of power, in which I can play whatever I want out of the 11:30 news.
I know you can.
And I picked this song because I love it. It's getting 100. I'm obsessed with her and that band. I don't know why, but I am, and I do love this song. There are a couple ones coming, and the album... They've released a couple songs already. The full album is coming later this month.
Okay, well, back it up and just play a little more for us here while we let the boys...
I would love to.
...chime in. Doma T, we didn't hear a lot of it. We'll hear a little more in a second. 1 to 100, what do you say?
85. I like it.
Don't patronize him, Doma T. No, you can't be serious.
I do, but I understand why you made the parody statement. It does sound like a song from... It reminds me of an old Temptation song or something like that. That's what I like, but I don't like the title. I don't think love should hurt.
Oh, no, it's a controversial title.
Okay, you got that. Joe Brand, 1 to 100, what do you give it?
You know, I'll hop right on Domati's train, say 85. I was a little thrown off. I kind of thought it was a Sonny and Cher thing going on.
But right.
Once it started playing, I did enjoy it. I have nothing against that.
They totally draw inspiration from pop music of yore, but that's what I love about it. Okay. Can you hear a little bit more?
Yeah. I got you, babe. Okay. 85, 100, and I've adjusted my score now. 43. I went up a notch.
Hey, 43.
How does that not make you smile, John? It's just so cheerful.
It was making me smile, but I don't think for the right reason. I don't think they knew how I was going to react. Or I'm sure they didn't care.
It's a fascinating reaction.
What else you got for us, Griff? 1 to 100. Go.
Infinity War made $1 billion in 11 days. I haven't seen it. I don't care.
Think about that. $1 billion. Companies exist for decades before they make $1 billion. This company called a movie called Infinity Wars made $1 billion.
You seem very certain of what it is and why it's making this much money.
What do you mean by that?
I can just tell from the way you talk about it that you're versed in the extended Marvel universe.
I am not. No. I just think though we sort of take that number for granted. Like a movie made $100,000 or $100 million or $1 billion. It's a movie that
I went to see it last night only in service of this segment. I thought, oh, we're probably going to talk about it. I should know a little bit about it.
There you go.
I went to the theater. It was assigned seating. I was there 15 minutes early, a pretty good buffer.
Yeah.
And the only seats that were available were in the front row. And I'm putting my cards on the table here. I didn't have that much interest in seeing it anyway. So I said, forget it. Sorry, guys.
So what do you give the movie, Griff?
I cannot officially score it yet. It's gotten reviews from all over the place. Michael Phillips of the Chicago Tribune gave it 2 stars. But then I've seen a lot of positive reactions in other places. Fans seem to... I don't want to generalize about fans. I think there's a lot of reactions. But it seems like now that it's out, it seems like it's the setup to a sequel that will come next year.
$1 billion. This company was not even available to you 12 days ago, and now it's a $1 billion enterprise.
Wow. Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Therefore, I'm giving the movie 87. Hey, by the way, can I just throw in an aside on this?
Sure, sure.
So, I don't watch any of these movies, but I watch Wonder Woman on the cruise.
That's a DC Comics movie.
What a great movie that is.
Yeah.
I enjoy Wonder Woman a lot.
Oh, man, what a great idea. I don't know if you guys know this, but it's this sort of... Never mind. But what a good movie that is.
Yeah, one of the biggest movies of last year. Kind of a surprise hit. And there's no surprise with Infinity War. I think this was expected. They got all of the members of the Marvel superhero blah, blah, blah together. And so, of course, it was going to be huge. And it is.
I want to throw two more movies at you that we saw.
Please.
And I love, love, love. Paddington 2 is the best movie I've seen.
I told you.
In 100 years.
I told you.
Paddington 2. Are you kidding me?
You try to tell people how great it is.
You can't.
They think you're joking.
I know.
And it's just like, watch it, man.
Well, you want to have fun 2 hours? Watch Paddington 2 and Phantom Thread. Fan-flipping-tastic.
I told you.
Wow.
I told you so.
Give me a celebrity in the news, Griff.
I think I know what you're fishing for.
Yep.
Kanye West is out here. Everybody knows.
What's our vibe on Kanye?
It's tough. I've been the biggest fan for the longest time.
Supporter of his art. And
defended him through a lot.
Mad genius.
But I'm not happy with Kanye now.
Said 400 years of slavery was a choice. And he didn't mean that, but he said that.
On TMZ, no less.
He speaks faster than he thinks.
That's so well put.
Yep. I saw people saying, like, this is a good reminder to read more than you write, read more than you speak. It's definitely true. So
he actually tweeted some terrible advice to the effect of don't think, just say what you feel.
you can tell that's what he's been
How's
up
that
to.
Working out for you, Kanye?
Not well.
You ask him that question, he'd probably say fine. I have no idea where his head's at. But this is not the first time I felt that way. But I do want to give him a zero. I'm just upset. It's been really hard as a fan.
Where are you on Kanye West Omotipongo?
I give him a 1 because I just can't give Kanye a 0.
No, you're right.
It's Kanye West. I give him a 1.
I'm going to 1, but that's still as low as I can.
Joe Brand, Kanye West, go.
I hardly have a dog in this fight. My friend's favorite line, though, to random people is, you know, I don't really like Kanye West's music. I just appreciate him as a person a lot more, and that usually gets the thing going. I'll say 1. I like Domitee's choices today.
I'm going to give him, like, 23 because that's Kanye, guys. That's Kanye.
That is, yeah. No. That's what you expect.
That's the horse he rode in on, and it's cuckoo, but I think that's part of the I think Kanye is a genius. I like his... Oh, really?
Well, he's a musical genius.
Well, that's I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's part of, that's what you get.
Yeah. No, you're right. I've gone to bat so many times, but I'm just not in the mood for it right now.
One more on the musical genius piece. Don't know if you guys heard the song with him and rapper T.I. where they combat political views. I thought it was pretty interesting.
That was tough.
It was like mincing rascals in hip hop form.
We should be so lucky. Let's do LeBron James. Where are you guys? Joe, you go first. The LeBron James creature. Where are you on that?
I guess my thoughts on LeBron are kind of yours still with Kanye, where he's still LeBron. I mean, he's arguably the best athlete in all of sports right now. And a lot of people say he's just a... not better, but larger version of Michael Jordan, a guy that's just created his own entity that's just a little bit better than Michael. Not saying that he is better than MJ, but...
You got to be very careful.
Absolutely, especially on these airwaves in this city.
I think you're right. He is a force of... like, he's decided how well that team is going to do. And it's happening because he's LeBron James, for God's sakes.
No? He seems to be very good at basketball.
That's such a great point. I never thought of it that way before. But yeah, he is just so powerful in his own entity.
He's so fun to watch right now.
I'll stay on the fence. I'll stay 50.
I don't even know what you're talking about. LeBron James, 96.
No, the question was not if he's better than MJ, although you seem to take it there right away.
I feel like that's your option, but that's not where I was going. I'm just like, don't you love watching LeBron in May?
I do.
Domitee, LeBron, I know you're a sports expert. Go.
100. Just because he's a great guy. I know nothing of this basketball thing you speak of, but he's a great guy.
You know what else? He's a very good actor.
I think you're right.
He was great in Trainwreck is what I
forgot about that.
Well, how many movies has he done, really? I mean,
but he was also really good on SNL. I remember when he would host those. Were always really funny.
Yeah.
He should be an actor, too.
Can we do Royal Weddings, Griffin, and then we'll wrap this up?
Yeah, sure. Please.
Royal Weddings. I've gone from my standard 12 to 93. I think we could use a royal wedding. What a great time for it in a couple of weeks. That's where I am.
We've talked about this before, but I'm not over the fact that it will feature, as the bride, no less, a former member of the cast of USA's Suits. I can't get enough of that.
So does that move it up or down in your scale?
Up.
Up, okay.
I love cast members on USA Network television shows being part of the royal family. I just think it's amazing.
That's
it's
good for
fantastic.
The world.
Yeah, I love
Talk
it.
About diversifying the tree a little.
So, shout out to all my Suits heads.
Boys, what do you say?
Do vibe scores work in negatives? Because I am not interested in the royal wedding.
Joe Brand, your thoughts, go.
Yeah, no bias whatsoever. 50 again.
They're just mad because they're such huge fans of the show Suits, and one of the stars is leaving.
Yeah.
That's that. It's tough
where?
For all of us,
Could
guys.
Be on a what? A royal what? By the way, there is a Russian robot that has been made that... it works as an HR officer and does interviews for companies. I want to play for you what the future is like in a minute on WGN. Company in Russia has developed a robot, a human resource officer robot. You ready to play cut one, Griffin? I guess it's more efficient. The robot can interview a lot more people than a human would, and maybe it has some sort of memory, but this is the future. This is the actual Russian robot actually doing a job interview the way an HR officer would.
Hello, my name is Vera. Thanks for your time. Right now we will make a short interview. It will be smooth and smart. Are you ready?
Yes, thanks.
All right. For a start, tell me, how do you grow the net promoter score of your accounts?
Well, the net promoter score is basically the tip of the iceberg, and my practice is to make customers happy and to keep brands' promises.
Me too. Now please define the word leadership in one sentence. just without using the word lead.
It is the art to inspire people to act together towards the same goal.
Brilliant. What one word would those who know you best describe you with?
Professional.
Wow. That's inspiring.
You don't get the feeling that the robot's really listening, you know? I mean, in fact, I submitted to an interview with Vera, too. This is cut two, Griffin.
Hello. My name is Vera. Right now we will make a short interview. It will be Smooth and Smart.
Oh, my God, what a coincidence. Smooth and Smart was my porn name.
All right.
By any chance, are you going to say, open the pod bay doors, Hal?
For a start, tell me, how do you grow the net promoter score of your accounts?
How do I grow accounts? Simple. I tell them I'm Lou Manfredini, and then we just sit back and count the cash.
Brilliant. Then, if you like this format, what one word would those who know you best describe you with?
Lost. That comes up a lot. You know, literally lost. Mentally lost, physically lost, lost my keys, lost, right? Just like totally lost.
Wow, that's inspiring.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Yeah, I know. So that's the future. I'm just warning you. You heard it here first. Bob Kessler, someday we're all going to be replaced by robots.
Maybe so. Yeah. I'm thinking of a Star Trek episode, original series, where Captain Kirk was able to defeat the computer by telling the computer, everything I say is a lie. Did you try that one?
No.
Because then the computer just, its head exploded, so to speak, because everything you say is a lie, but what you just told me, is that a lie? But then that would be true. And it goes into this logical kind of feedback loop, and the computer just... Bzz, bzz.
I didn't think of that when I was talking to Vera.
Try that with Vera.
Hey, Vera. Bob's got the news in a second. Amy will pop in. Let's see what she's got ready for you coming up on WGN. 11:59. Amy Guth is in the studio. By the way, thank you to Bob Ferguson for getting us started this morning. The engineer, Doma Tipongo in the newsroom. Joe Brand, always a pleasure to work with you, Joe. And Griffin Filipich is our Saturday morning producer. He works with Amy Guth, too. Hey, Amy, what's going on?
I call him esteemed producer Griffin Filipich.
I don't. So what are you guys...
Terrible.
All right, Griff. That's the way it goes. So what are you doing today?
Well, we're going to talk about three things that have been in the news kind of a lot lately, and that is the Facebook's new foray into the dating world, which is kind of an interesting move considering all the conversation around privacy and all of that right now.
Timing is so important.
Focus, Zuckerberg. Focus. I need you to think this through, buddy.
I'm sure you've been working on it for a while, but I would delay.
Yeah, maybe just pump the brakes on that just a little bit. I know that seems like a word. So a lot of people are talking about that on social media right now. And then also Peapod, as we're looking at like Instacart and Amazon Fresh and all these other competitors, Peapod is kind of making some new moves to try to stay in that space. And then another very big story right now is about the bike sharing program in Chicago. There's a little bit of controversy there.
You know, I had the general manager from Divvy on earlier today.
Yeah.
And I broached the subject, and the phone connection wasn't great. It was toward the end of the interview. I should have probably spent more time on that.
Yeah.
Where the bikes are, who gets to ride them, what are the issues involved?
Yeah. So
is that where you're going with
that's
this?
That's where I'm going with that, yeah. As we're looking at the dockless bike program and that how they have to be locked, and there's an alderman that's kind of taking that mantle and running with it. So we shall see.
Have a good show.
Thanks very much.